The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th Canto, 2nd Chapter, Text Number 5, given by His Divine Grace, Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj Gurudev, given April the 5th, 1985, in Dallas.
This is from the Canto 12, Chapter 2, Text Number 5, The Symptoms of the Kali Yuga. A person will be judged unholy if he does not have money, and hypocrisy will be accepted as a virtue. Marriage will be arranged simply by verbal agreement, and a person will think he is fit to appear in public if he has merely taken a bath. Purport. The word dumbha indicates a self-righteous hypocrite, someone not so much concerned with being saintly as with appearing saintly. In the age of Kali, there is a rather large number of self-righteous, hypocritical religious fanatics, claiming to have the only way, the only truth, and the only light. In many Muslim countries, this mentality has resulted in brutal repression of religious freedom and thus destroyed the opportunity for enlightened spiritual dialectic. Fortunately, in much of the Western world, there is a system of free religious expression. Even in the West, however, self-righteous hypocrites consider sincere and saintly followers of other disciplines to be heathens and devils. Western religious fanatics are usually addicted to many bad habits, such as smoking, drinking, sex, gambling, and animal slaughter. Although the followers of the Krishna consciousness movement strictly avoid illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and animal killing, and although they dedicate their lives to the constant glorification of God, self-righteous hypocrites claim that such strict austerity and devotion to God are, quote, tricks of the devil, close with quotes. Thus, the sinful are promoted as religious and the saintly are decried as demonic. This pathetic incapacity to grasp the most rudimentary criteria of spirituality is a prominent symptom of Kali Yuga. In this age, the institution of marriage will degenerate. Indeed, already, a marriage certificate is sometimes cynically rejected as, quotes, a mere piece of paper, close quotes. Forgetting the spiritual purpose of marriage and misunderstanding sex to be the goal of family life, lusty men and women directly engage in sexual affairs without the troublesome formalities and responsibilities of a legal relationship. Such foolish people argue that, quote, sex is natural, close quotes. But if sex is natural, pregnancy and childbirth are equally natural. And for the child, it is certainly natural to be raised by a loving father and mother, and in fact to have the same father and mother throughout his life. Psychological studies confirm that a child needs to be cared for both by his father and his mother, and thus it is obviously natural for sex to be accompanied by a permanent marriage arrangement. Hypocritical people justify unrestricted sex by saying, quotes, it is natural, close quotes. But to avoid the natural consequence of sex, pregnancy, they use contraceptives, which certainly do not grow on trees. Indeed, contraceptives are not at all natural. Thus, hypocrisy and foolishness abound in the age of Kali. The verse concludes by saying that people will neglect to ornament their bodies properly in the present age. A human being should decorate his body with various religious ornaments. Vaishnavas mark their bodies with tilak, blessed with the holy name of God. But in the age of Kali, religious and even material formalities are thoughtlessly discarded. So the first statement is that a person will be judged unholy if he does not have money. That we have already been discussing in previous class. And we can see practically how presently the various religious sects around America are very ambitiously constructing gigantic monuments to testify to their great wealth. It's not uncommon for different religious groups to have huge multi-story buildings, not so much for the purpose of service to God as much as to display their wealth, because it is a commonly held conception that if you are wealthy, then God has blessed you with that wealth, and it means that you are actually a religious person. It would be, therefore, it is very confusing. And for such persons who possess such a mentality to be able to appreciate the simple lifestyle that we actually hold to be very dear. For this reason, because of this confusion, we sometimes have to adjust our own standards so as to bridge the gap between the misconceptions of the materialists and Vedic principles. For example, we try to live in very decent accommodations, perhaps even more for the sake of preaching than our own needs. In other words, we can live quite simply, but if we live too much simply, then people will see it as an impoverished condition and a sign of irreligion. This can therefore be expanded to include so many different facts. For example, during the Ratha Yatra in 1976 in New York City, our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, asked that we take all of our Sankirtan vans and line them up and follow the Ratha Yatra carts in a procession of vans. So our Radha Damodar party had about 40 vans. So we lined these up, I think it was four abreast, down Fifth Avenue, 10 rows of them. And Prabhupada said that this would be a display of opulence, which would the public would then appreciate that God is very opulent and God's movement is very opulent. So this is the brilliance of the Acharya, especially one like Srila Prabhupada. Who would have ever imagined? I don't think that there's any pundit or servant of Lord Jagannath in Jagannath Puri that would have ever dreamed of taking 40 Dodge maxi vans and following the Ratha Yatra cart. Ratha Yatra cart is made of simple wood. But Prabhupada said that this was a way to demonstrate that actually Jagannath is the Lord of the universe. So, according to the time, place, and circumstance, the devotees have to adjust their preaching. Preaching also involves the way we live. You cannot separate how we live with how we preach, because people will judge us not simply by our words, but by our behavior. Not only our behavior in terms of when we go out to meet the public, but perhaps even more so our behavior when we are living amongst ourselves. Therefore, it is very much important that we demonstrate behind the closed doors just as much Krishna consciousness as we say we are capable of when we're going outside of our doors. That means our communities have to be a practical display of Vaishnava qualities in all respects. The way we interact together as devotees, the way we maintain our living accommodations, the way we serve and prepare and take prasadam, the way we keep our facilities clean, the way we personally dress, the way we raise the children. You see, all of these things have to be very properly planned out and carried out, in order for people to see that actually this is more first class than anything else. So, we don't want this hypocrisy, which has now become accepted as a virtue. That means that people make a show of religiosity without possessing the qualities of religiousness. We see in all of the churches throughout America how people make their, you know, they make their presence known on Sunday at church in their best clothes, and thus they're considered to be religious men or women, despite the fact that they may be highly irreligious. We have experience of one person who was a zealous preacher, you know, of God, and yet she was conducting all kinds of illicit affairs. And this goes on so many times. You see, people who say and take worship and take followers, saying that they are very pure, they're actually abominable. They have illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat-eating, etc. So similarly, we also should not be hypocrites. Devotees should not come every morning to Mangal Arati to cover the fact that they're doing something illicit. Because just as it may be done by others outside of our religion, it can also be done within our own religion itself. That would be a very good cover, wouldn't it? Come to the Mangal Arati, you see, have your hands and your bead back, and everybody would think, oh, this is a very fixed up devotee, but on the side, doing something illicit. You cannot fool Krishna, and you cannot fool Krishna's representatives. You see, those who are Krishna conscious will be able to penetrate very perfectly the behavioral patterns of an individual and see through the, you know, sham. So hypocrisy should not enter within our midst. It has certainly entered within the midst of the world at large. And Charyadeva in his commentary has stated how in some of the Muslim countries now there is such a cry of, you know, religion, 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 and yet they're doing some of the heaviest persecution ever seen. You know, just annihilating people, massacring people in the name of, you know, God and religion. This is hypocrisy. It's completely hypocritical. Marriage, of course, is a very important institution, but here it says it will be accepted simply by verbal agreement. Practically speaking, it has gone to the point now like that. Although this was 5,000 years ago stated, it has come like that. That simply a man and a woman meet each other, have some sex together for a few days, and decide, I think we should get married. And as quickly as they decide that, within a few months, they think, I think we should get divorced now. Convenience. Marriage has become a convenience for indulging in sex life. And practically speaking, it is not even necessary anymore to get married to have sex life. Everybody is freely mixing together for the business of sex. So it is actually important that we raise our children a little bit to be free from this increased involvement between the sexes. If we want, just like we see, that our men who join our movement when they're 20, 25, 30, our women who join, they're very agitated. It's a fact. Practically everyone who joins our movement is in a sexually agitated condition. But you can trace this agitation to the fact that there was free mixing of the sexes during childhood. Therefore, the Gurukul system actually separates the sexes, not only during the class time, but in general, even afterwards. So, if we want to ideally train our children, then that gradually has to be instituted. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of agitated, you know, young devotees when they get older, and then they all have to get married. Of course, the reason why brahmachari life is desirable is if one can remain a brahmachari, he can avoid so many problems. Anyone who's married knows that it is a problem to have to look after so many considerations for wife and children. Of course, it is better to take that botheration than to artificially be so much agitated in the mind that one cannot meditate on Krishna in any case. then that is also not good. It's better to get married. But best of all is that if one can actually diminish this sexual agitation, then it's possible to avoid marriage altogether, remain a brahmachari, and simply serve Guru and Krishna without any other botheration. So this possibility is very much increased if there is separation of the sexes when the children are young. It's not natural. You may say, oh, it's quite natural for boys and girls to mix. You may say so. It is natural for those who are embodied. That means that as long as you have fallen out of the spiritual world, it may be natural. But it's not natural to be outside the spiritual world. It's natural for the soul to be in the spiritual world. This is an unnatural condition. This is the diseased condition. So once you're diseased, if you start deciding what's natural as opposed to unnatural, that's foolishness. In a diseased condition, everything is unnatural. When you have a fever, when you're suffering from some severe illness, every part of your daily behavior is unnatural, isn't it? It's all changed. It's all clouded by the fact that you're ill. So everything that we're doing in our material conditioned state is not natural. Natural is when you become unconditioned, pure devotee of God. Then we'll know what is natural. Because then everything you do will be done out of love for God. And that doesn't involve attraction between the sexes. It's described that in the spiritual world, there's attraction to Krishna. Because Krishna is more attractive than any man or any woman. So when you have given up this false conception of being the body, and you actually understand that you're the soul, and you have love for Krishna, then this business of what is natural in this material world, namely sex life, becomes an unnatural phenomenon. Therefore, advanced devotees do not find attraction, you know, for women, or if they're women, they don't find attraction for men. That they give up that attraction. And that's the symptom of advancement in spiritual life. When you no longer feel attracted to the opposite sex, then you'll understand that you're making some advancement. But remember that repulsion is just another sign of the opposite sign of attraction. One should be indifferent. One should not be attracted, nor be overly repelled. You see? But in order to come to that stage, one should stay away. Keep free from too much involvement with the opposite sex. Whether married or unmarried, doesn't matter. That is there. In Vedic culture also, it is there. They made that arrangement. This business of living in individual homes is an adjustment which we make in the Western countries in this present age. But in the older system, in the Vedic culture, there were very big houses. The father would have many sons, and his sons would be married, and they'd all live in a big joint family. And the men would stay together, and the women would stay together. The women were very happy, and the men were very happy. And there would be some mixing, but it would not be to the extent of, this is my wife, this is my home, these are my children, and everybody else keep away, which is the Western concept, which increases the knot, the tightness of the knot of ahankara, or false ego. So hopefully, you know, as time progresses, we will see the evolvement of that culture, the Vedic culture. Because actually, it is a culture which was meant for spiritual advancement. Whereas this present system, you see, so much of what we do, even in our movement now, is borrowed from materialistic Western society. So many of our patterns and styles are borrowed. Because it is an adjustment period. Prabhupada has just planted the seed. It is just beginning our Krishna consciousness movement. But take it a few generations from now, it will get a different appearance, no doubt. It will resemble what we read about in our books more clearly. So marriage will be arranged simply by verbal agreement and broken. But we should not do that in our movement. This business of boyfriend-girlfriend business is not permitted. Marriages have to be arranged. That doesn't mean they're forced, but it means that they should be arranged by superior authorities. Because if one simply goes woman hunting or man hunting, that is very bad. Then there is no more chastity amongst the women. There is no more gravity amongst the men. There's simply sex business. That is no good. Then it's mundane. So as someone requires to be married, then the spiritual master or the temple authorities may suggest to that person, here is a proper person, see if you agree. And then gradually after the marriage is made properly, then there should be fire sacrifice, vows taken, and no divorce. Marriage means permanent for one's life until the man takes sannyas. Not that swapping of husbands and wives. That is not at all recommended, and Prabhupada was very displeased with that. In fact, when Prabhupada started to see that happening on occasion, he became so disgusted that he gave up trying to help disciples to decide who they should marry. So one should not do that. And then it says a person will think that he is, and of course, that business of swapping, etc., will be avoided if everyone remains very submissive to the directions of the spiritual master. Whether one is a brahmachari, whether one is a grihastha, a vanaprastha, or a sannyasi, they must abide by the directions of their authorities. As soon as we give up listening to our authorities and we take shelter and counsel from our own mind, then problems are going to ensue. Because your mind, you know, in the conditioned stage, the mind is made up of desires and sense enjoyment. It's not made up of Shastra and Sadhu and Guru. So you have to go to Shastra. If you want to know what you should do, you take the advice from Scripture. You take the advice from saintly persons and from the spiritual master. You don't have to speculate. It's all there very, very clearly. And don't just say, I'm going to take advice from Scripture, but not from Guru or saintly persons. You have to take advice from all three, because you may misinterpret the words of Scripture. But if the spiritual master, saintly persons, if they all confirm your understanding of Scripture, then you will know that it is bona fide and authorized to do something. And this is how we should proceed. Then it says that there will be, this situation will arise where persons will think that they are fit to appear in public if they merely take a bath. Nowadays, people do, to some extent, you know, see that bathing makes one appear clean. But they don't understand that the body is naked if one does not put on tilak in the 12 different places of the body after bathing. So Prabhupada said that a person whose body is without tilak is considered to still be naked, even though they may be wearing clothing. So even for those devotees who have to go out into the public, who don't have tilak, they should put tilak on with water and a mantra. Om Kesavaya Namaha. And if you can't find water, then just do it with your finger. Om Kesavaya Namaha. Krishna will see that tilak. But you must decorate the body with the signs of Vishnu and repeat the mantras. Then you get protected, and you get the attraction. There's a statement in the Nectar Devotion that anyone who leaves his body wearing the tilak automatically goes back to Godhead. Anyone who wears this Tulsi Mala at the time of death, he will go back to Godhead. Because Krishna sees him and knows, this is my devotee. So there are real reasons for this. You know, it's not just some superstition. It will help you to achieve the perfection of life, which is to be able to go back to Godhead. It's not just some mere blind ritual. Of course, nowadays, it is mentioned here, that simply by bathing that they will be thinking themselves fit to be in public, gradually people will consider that the only necessary item of clothing, a bath. And they will be naked. You know, just like at the beaches now, there are some beaches where people go naked. So why not public? It will come like that. It will gradually come to that point in the Kali Yuga, just like animals. Animals don't put on clothing. And as the situation degrades more and more in this age, people will become more like animals. They will also stop wearing clothes. Barbarians, wild people. Just like in some countries where there is no civilization, they go naked. They don't know better. They go naked. And so, these times are coming, and we have to try to stave off this onslaught of the Kali Yuga. The different ages are described to be under the effect of different modes, and the Kali Yuga is under the effect of the mode of ignorance. Simply of ignorance. So, on the other hand, a devotee is in the mode of goodness. So a devotee is said to be situated in a condition which resembles the Satyayuga. And a temple of the Lord like this is said to be in the mode of goodness. It is also like the Satyayuga. And therefore, so long as you live and stay within the safety and shelter of the temple, you are not affected by the symptoms of the Kali Yuga. Just like you can see, we're reading these things, but these things don't come within our community. These symptoms that we've been reading are not present within our community because it's like the Satyayuga here. Therefore, anyone who goes out away from this community and starts to disassociate himself gradually comes into the mode of ignorance and passion. And we have seen our, you know, devotees who have unfortunately fallen away, when you do see them again, they're like, they've lost their spiritual effulgence. They're overwhelmed by ignorance and passion. So don't go away. You see, stay closely tied to ISKCON and to the atmosphere of this wonderful temple. So we will end here and see if there are any questions which you may have. I'll try to answer them.
I know you mentioned that Prabhupada was discouraged at one point when he was trying to arrange marriages because of the result. So what is the explanation for Kali Yuga, just why so many arranged marriages from ISKCON seem to turn out well?
I don't find that they turn out bad. It seems to me that our percentage of success here is much higher than what it is in the material world. In the material world, how many marriages succeed? It's one out of two marriages ends in divorce. Now, I don't think that's been the case here. Now, of course, you could say, well, we haven't waited long enough to tell. Well, that's a good point. But still, I think our success rate in ISKCON is much higher than one out of two. Must be at least three out of four marriages succeed. One advantage we have is if they don't succeed, one can take sannyas. We have about three out of four successes, I would estimate. That's a pretty high percentage. 75%. That's much better than 50%. And it may be much higher than 75%. I don't know. I don't know if anyone's ever made a study of it. Therefore, one should not rush into marriage, but should be very convinced that the person is the proper person. Not that one should just jump into it. Another question? Prabhupada, that was the beginning of our movement. But what Prabhupada did set up for the householders was in Los Angeles. The example of the way Prabhupada set up a householder community is Los Angeles and not other places. Los Angeles is the example that he established for the United States. He got many buildings and he said each householder can have an apartment. And as you advance, as the householders advance, they'll become less and less attached to each other, then automatically they'll want to live separately. Prabhupada said that's better. If the husband and wife live completely separately, that's a higher standard. But that has to come in a natural way. If you try to do that prematurely, then it doesn't serve its purpose. It becomes a source of, you know, frustration and repression, and from repression comes anger. And when a devotee becomes angry, he loses his intelligence. So, first of all, let the husband and wife live in an apartment, but at night they should not sleep in the same room. That should never be. And then gradually, after they have enough experience of this, you know, so-called pleasure of living together, then they can gradually lose that taste and they can live separately. That will happen. In this case, Prabhupada said that the householders should not live together in the same apartment if it was in the same, you know, building. Like we have many small temples where the living room was made into a temple room. And then the different bedrooms were used for devotees to live in. Prabhupada said the householders should not live together in such a situation. So it may have been under that type of circumstance that you're referring to. And Prabhupada said the men should live separately from the women. But in a situation like Los Angeles, where we have a temple building which is just for the deities, and each household had their own living accommodation, then he said they could live as husband and wife together. Anyone add anything on that point? Kartikeya?
Is there a condition to be able to achieve self-realization? Is it do or die condition that men and husband and wife should separate?
No, it's not. In this age, it's recommended that by the time you're 50, that the husband should be able to take sannyas. But if he's not, then that's what can be done. But then they should become vanaprasthas. They should serve Krishna very nicely together. Even if a man does not take sannyas, if both the husband and wife are engaged always in serving Krishna, then that's all right. But best thing is if the man is strong enough that he can actually fully separate. It's not, I won't say it's do or die. I don't think we can make that statement. That if for some reason one cannot take sannyas, then it means they cannot go back to Godhead. I have not found that statement anywhere. So you have to see, you know, how you are by 50, 55. Prabhupada said, he said very clearly, he had no intention of leaving his, you know, taking sannyas. He had absolutely no intention to take sannyas. Said, but his Guru Maharaj forced him by appearing to him repeatedly in a dream. He forced him to take sannyas. So, not everybody will take sannyas, but it is recommended. All of our married men should certainly aspire for that and prepare themselves, and the wives should prepare themselves to be nicely Krishna conscious so that by the time their husbands become 50 or so years of age, that they're not, you know, so much dependent that they have to say, no, don't take sannyas, I can't stand it, I'll kill myself. You laugh, but many women have said that. Of course, their husbands were not 50, and that may be part of the problem. And that also creates problems. If a man takes sannyas prematurely and the wife is not fixed up, then she starts to look around for another husband. That's a disaster. That becomes a big problem in our movement, and we don't want that. Therefore, no early sannyas. Better not to do that. Anyone who's married, that's what I'm telling anybody now. If you want to get married, you're going to be in the well, you know, for 20 to 30 years before you're going to climb out. So think twice about it before you jump in. Another question? Yes, Jim?
Yeah, I was reading the other day in Times where, I'm sure you heard this, Baptist on the West.
Which book were you reading in?
The Times.
Which Times?
You know, the magazine Times?
Time magazine. Okay.
I was reading where, I'm sure you heard, his name is Robert Schuller. He has a crystal cathedral on the West Coast. I was reading where last year, just through his congregation, he collected over $4 million, and through TV coverage, he collected over $40 million. So how is he able to collect all this money? Is it through his good karma, and what are the reactions for him cheating on his people?
Well, I don't know about this person that you're mentioning, but as it says here, a person will be judged unholy if he does not have money. In other words, this is what I'm trying to say, that people think that if someone's a preacher and is wealthy, by giving him more wealth, then they'll become wealthy. Just like in India, there was one sadhu in Vrindavan, Pagala Baba. That means crazy Baba. So all of the Marwadis, this one class of very wealthy merchants throughout India, they have got this superstition that if you gave Pagala Baba money, then you would get many times more wealth. You see? So, as a result, and this man was a complete nonsense. He used to smoke cigarettes and everything. He wasn't that pious. I won't say he was a total nonsense, but he was not so, he was not of the standard. But because people felt that if you give him money, he's rich, you'll get richer, they would give him more and more money. And in the same way, of course, they get cheated, because that's not a fact. Unless he's pure and gives the money to Krishna, you don't get any benefit spiritually. So similarly with all of these people, they see some wealthy preacher, and they think that by giving money to him, I'll get more wealth. That's why they do it. Their idea of God is that God is their order supplier. If you go to church regularly, and you go to that person's church who's got this big palace, you see a big, you know, whatever it is on the West Coast, you said, you know, that God will bless you by giving you more money and more enjoyment. And that's the sign. The more you can enjoy in this life means that God has blessed you. That's their conception of religion. But we know that their enjoyment is, this sense gratification, is most of it is so sinful that they're going to enjoy now and they're going to pay very dearly later on. So yes, it may be due to his karma, certainly. No one has anything happen to them in this world which is not due to karma. But spiritual life means to get free from karma, not to get more karma. So giving money, you know, to a person just because he wears robes, but if that person is not qualified, then you get karma and he takes your karma also. But if you give money to a genuine devotee who offers the money you gave to Krishna and Krishna's service, then you get free from karma and he also gets purified by it. Any other questions? Yes, okay, quick one because we're running out of time. You ask the spiritual master, or you ask the senior Vaishnavas, and they'll tell you if what you're going to do is based on what the super soul is telling you or what your mind is telling you. That's what I've just finished saying. Don't just listen to your mind. Ask the saintly persons and the guru, and then you'll know. Okay, Jai, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga.